first, thank you, Seth, for hosting my show. And tonight I wanted to discuss the Sabbath mode oven. Sabbath mode oven. But it's called Sabbath mode oven. That's what it says in the ovens.
Sabbath mode.
S-A-B. S-A-B. Oh, S-H? Yeah. Okay, so maybe it's some of them say Sabbath mode. It's a Shabbos. Okay. Regardless. That's what I wanted to discuss tonight. So just to have an idea of what we're going to talk about, if you're not familiar with the Shabbos mode oven, just to give you a drop of a background before we then get into. So I'll give you an idea of what we'll talk about, and then we'll get into some of the introduction before we actually talk about the Shabbos oven, how it all relates to the Shabbos oven. Shabbos oven, I don't know what year it came out. I think it was in 2007 or so, 2008.
Recently?
It's older. Maybe it's older. There was a, well, the response to it was written in 2008. There was the Star K, you're right, I'm sorry. I have the information here somewhere. It was early.
Like
it doesn't matter.
I only use the bypass. I don't use it.
Okay, so what the Shabbos mode oven is basically the Star K, sorry, 1997, you're right. 1997, the Star K, which is the Kashrus organization in Baltimore, who the head of the Star K is Rav Moshe Heineman, who was a tremendous Talmid Chacham and a big posek, and one of the leading poskim, was the leading posek in Baltimore. So Rav Heineman teamed up with some of the appliance companies, I think Whirlpool, GE, one of them or both of them, at the start to create an oven that would be that can be used on Yom Tov. Right? It's called the Shabbos mode oven, although it has very little to do with Shabbos, almost nothing to do with Shabbos. Because you can't cook on Shabbos. But it's really for Yom Tov, and maybe it was just easier to write S-A-B or S-H-A-B on the computer screen rather than...
And it's alliteration of how do you spell Yom Tov.
Exactly. They say, let's keep it simple. And they call it a Shabbos mode oven. So what it basically is that it bypasses a lot of the regular ovens. After 12 hours or after 24 hours, they'll go off. So if you put in the Shabbos mode oven, it doesn't turn off after the 12, 24 hours. It stays on for as long as it stays on for until you manually turn it off, which of course is good for somebody cooking for a second day of Yom Tov. On the second day of Yom Tov, your oven will go off. You have no way of cooking. So if you wanted to cook for the second day of Yom Tov on Yom Tov, so you'd only be able to do it if you have an oven that will stay on for longer than the 12 or 24 hours that is allotted to you. And then there are other features as well that it somehow bypasses. The beeping, if you have a time-baked oven, it doesn't beep after the baking is finished. It doesn't turn on the light or off the light when you open or close the oven, or at least most of them don't. They also...
There's also a way to adjust it.
So then one of the, another main... main thing that was put into these ovens is that the screen... that has the, all this is digital, so the screen that has the digital temperature as to what you're setting the oven is off on the Shabbos mode, which means if you press buttons on the touch pad, you will not see what you're pressing on the screen. So you might accidentally set it for 700 degrees, which would not be a good thing, but if you're careful, you can set it to 250, to 500, to 300, whatever you needed to do. You can't see the numbers that you're typing in. You just know I'm typing, I'm hitting 300, and now you know it's 300. And then, so that's another thing that he did. He shut off, somehow they shut off the screen. Now, there are two different ones, apparently. There's one that's called the Sabbath mode, and one that's called the Sabbath compliance. And there's a small difference between them. The Sabbath mode oven, when you press the buttons, let's say you have it on, you have it set for 250, and now comes Yom Tov morning and you want to actually cook something, so you need it up to 450. So in the Sabbath mode oven, if you press 450, it does not change it immediately. There's a delay. There's a time delay. Somehow it sends the current, every 15, 25 seconds or so, there would be a break of 15, 25 seconds that it will not recognize a new setting on that temperature, and therefore there would be a time delay between when I press 450 and when it actually turns to 450.
Why is that necessary on Yom Tov?
Okay, so we'll hold on. And then the Shabbos compliant, is that there's no delay at all. Right? Shabbos compliant one, the Sabbath compliant one, is that there's no delay, but it does solve all the other ones, that it keeps it on, it doesn't have the automatic shut off, it doesn't have the beep, 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 beep until you turn it off, it doesn't have the nothing on the screen, the lights are fixed, and even when you open and close the oven, it won't turn the oven off when you open it, or may not even, the thermostat may not be as exact, that every time you open or close the oven, it will turn the thermostat back on, you know, play with the thermostat. So they're pretty similar, except for that time delay. So we'll get to why that time delay would be necessary. Okay, so that's the Shabbos mode oven, right? With a regular oven, obvious issues of turning it, of it going off. But there are also the other issues of the sounds that it makes when you try to open and close the door, and worrying about when you open the door and the cooler air from outside coming into the oven, it may turn the thermostat on sooner, it may reignite the flame sooner, or whatever exactly it would do.
That's the problem with the fridge.
It's a similar problem as the fridge, yeah. Yeah. Although sometimes the thermostats on ovens, I think, might be more exact. I'm not sure. But yeah, we probably can get around it, because just like the fridge, we said it's so far removed from assuming that every time it happens, so too here. Okay. So that's just a background about the ovens that we'll be discussing. So now a little bit of background about some of the potential issues that Rav Heinemann had to get around or tried to solve, and the response of some rabbis in 2008 when they came out with a response against this type of oven. Why it took 11 years, I'm not sure. That's why I thought it was 2007.
It's a time delay.
Yes.
I'll tell you why, because other companies sometimes pay their average say the other way around.
No.
Beforehand, I think, because they had the non-digital ovens were still being sold.
You're saying only then,
only
was
like after
in 2008
something, all of a
did
sudden
they stop?
The dial ovens are...
You still buy dial ovens.
Very few places can you find it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are all digital now.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's...
Uh-huh. Okay,
that's
could be. Maybe that's why. All right, so just as a way of a little bit of an introduction. So there is a difference between Shabbos and Yontif. We know that the big difference between the halachas of Shabbos and Yontif, besides for the punishment that a person gets for violating Shabbos as opposed to the punishment a person gets for violating Yontif, the big difference is that you are allowed to do acts that are prohibited on Shabbos if they're done for the purposes of ochel nefesh, which means for food-related activities that are done that might be forbidden on Shabbos are permitted on Yontif. Which is why you can't cook on Shabbos, right? You can cook on Yontif, you can't cook on Shabbos. That's why the Shabbos mode oven really doesn't help you for Shabbos. So the only way a person might think that it would help is, well, since it doesn't go off, so maybe I could leave the Shabbos, the oven on Friday night, right? And then Shabbos morning, I'd be able to put food back in, not to cook, but to rewarm the food, right? That could be a thought.
What about hatmana?
Right. So not hatmana. Hatmana meaning insulating. So the reason why it's not hatmana is because it's not touching the pot on all sides.
You
don't
have
right?
to put it in the oven?
No. You can't put it in the oven. Because...
What about if you had a chillin that you put in before Shabbos in your oven, and then you're going to take it out on Shabbos day? And then the Shabbos mode would.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean
it could be
cooked. Yeah, as long as
right.
it's as long as it's
right.
as long as it's one
out.
Third cooked.
Right.
At the onset of Shabbos.
Right, but if you, the whole thing with the Shabbos mode is that
it leaves
off,
it
on. Turn it off after 12 hours.
Correct. That's
so
true.
If they
right.
keep the mode on, then you can keep the food in before Shabbos and take it in on Shabbos day.
Right. That's true. If you leave something in the, you can leave something in the oven at the onset of Shabbos as long as that food is 1/3 of the way cooked. At the onset of Shabbos, that's called shehiya. Shehiya means that you're allowed. Shehiya means leaving something on the flame from the onset of Shabbos.
You can do that with a regular oven. Also,
you can do that with
a
regular
oven.
Oven you don't need a Shabbos oven.
To do that.
The reason why a Shabbos oven would help is because it won't turn off.
You have an electric oven.
Oh,
so let's say now Shabbos starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If you have a regular 12-hour oven, it will shut off at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you'll be eating cold cholent for lunch. But with a Shabbos oven, if you leave it in there and let it cook through the night into the morning, then at least you'll have hot cholent. So, I think most people use the crock pot.
Right.
But yes, hypothetically, one would be able to do that, and that would be a benefit for Shabbos.
Is it possible to have muscle cleanse then, possibly?
Yeah, some poskim, but not for now. So what more commonly, what I would think that I would be able to do with the Shabbos oven on Shabbos is take something out of my refrigerator, let's say, and the same way I could put it on, let's say, a hot plate. Shabbos morning, I take my kugel out of the refrigerator. I want to warm up my potato kugel for lunch on Shabbos, so I take it out of the fridge. I put it on the hot plate or on the inverted pot on the hot plate, according to some, and I warm it up in that way. So can I put it into my oven to warm it up in the oven? The oven can stay on. It's a Shabbos mode oven. The lights won't be going on. There'll be no beeping. There'll be nothing. So the answer is no. And the question is just why. So the reason why not is because the Shulchan Aruch writes that you can't put something back into an oven. Right? We can put something on top, and as long as it's when you're doing putting something on the flame, either returning it to the flame or taking something out of the refrigerator which is completely cooked on Shabbos and putting it back onto some type of heating element. So as long as the heating element is covered with something, right? The Gemara talks about Gruf of the Ketumah, because in the time of the Gemara they were discussing coal. They were cooking with fire and coals and wood. So it would have to be Gruf of the Ketumah, which means it's covered over with dust, which is basically putting out the fire, or pushed over to the side. So the way we do that nowadays is by putting down a blech. Right? A blech covers the flame on the stove, and then that's grufa. That's grufa, that it's covered. So that's why you'd be allowed to put something onto that on Shabbos. Now, the only other issue is that you can't do anything that looks too much like you're cooking on Shabbos. Right? You can't do anything that looks too much like you're cooking. So even if you were to tell me, and there are different opinions exactly how you perform covering a flame nowadays, because let's say there's no exposed flame. So can you say that all our ovens are covered, the flame is covered, because the flames are not exposed? Right? In the time of the Gemara, they had a fire, and they would put it, let's say they had a fire in a box, basically, and on top of the box there was a hole for the pot to sit on top of, and they would cook in that way. So before Shabbos, what you'd have to do is take some dust and some sand and throw it onto the flame to basically extinguish the fire. If it was still a little bit warm because you had coals that were going out, and you'd still be allowed to put a pot back onto the top of that that firebox and warm up the food in that way. So nowadays, in most of these devices, certainly in electric ovens, most of the electric ovens, the heating element is not exposed. Usually it's in the walls. So you could make the claim that...
Not if you don't broil.
Not if you don't broil. Okay.
Right, but you're not going to broil if you're just heating something.
Right. You wouldn't leave it on broil all day just to warm something.
Is that the reason? The reason is because you don't want to put it on an open...
No, so the reason why you can't... Why you can't what?
Why you can't put something into the oven.
No, so the reason why you can't put something into the oven is even if it's considered as though it's covered, right? Even if it's as if this is considered a covering, or let's say you get one of those inserts, so still you wouldn't be able to put it into the oven because it looks too much like you're cooking. Right? It's called mechzei kemevashel.
Yeah, but how do you know if I have it in since Friday night already?
Because they'll see you putting it in. I can't put something into the oven on Shabbos. Because by putting something into the oven on Shabbos, it looks like I'm cooking. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch writes. Toch ha-tanur, into the tanur, not on top. On top is one thing. That's why we all have hot plates and blechs. We put things on top of fires to warm them up. But into the oven, which is into the fire,
that's the... is not a problem. It's the putting it in.
Right, it's putting it in. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
there's still a problem. No, because even if it was Maris Ayin problem, yeah. Maris Ayin is whatever is usher that you can't do because of Maris Ayin, you can't do even if you're in hiding. The Gemara says even Bechadre Chadarim is usher because of Maris Ayin. So this is not exactly Maris Ayin. I know it sounds a little bit like Maris Ayin the way I'm describing it, but the wording is Aval Litocha usher, the Shulchan Aruch says. And the explanation given is because that since kevan shehu ma'amid l'tocho k'derech shemevashlim b'tadir, since by putting something into it, which is the normal way of cooking, which is the way you normally cook, nireh kemevasho, which is a quote from a number of the Rishonim, that it looks like you're cooking. because that's the way you cook every day, all day long. You put something into the oven. That already, the rabbis were not ready to allow.
What if you had an inner boiler?
Right, that's an insert.
Right.
Even that, because I guess it wouldn't be obvious. If I came here for Shabbos and I was sitting in here and I saw you open your oven and put something in, I wouldn't see your inner blech, right? Now, if you have a blech on top of the oven, on top of the stove, so I see it there, and it's obvious to me that you're doing something, right? So if it's, I don't think that would work either, because I think that would still look like you're cooking. So anyway, that's why the Shabbos mode oven, although it's called the Shabbos mode at this point, is when I look at my watch and I say, what? Ready 9 o'clock. The Shabbos mode oven is not really Shabbos mode, right? That's basically what this means. Now, so fine, it's not Shabbos mode. You can't cook on Shabbos. So what about using it on Yom Tov? Now, certainly you can use it on Yom Tov. The question is about raising and lowering the flame on Yom Tov, raising and lowering the temperature, and turning it off. Meaning actually turning it off. Can I turn off the oven and turn on the oven on Yom Tov? So raising and lowering the flame in general, let's say you have a regular flame, right, and then we'll apply it to the oven. So you have a regular flame, you have a fire. The Mishnah says in Beitza, when it comes to Yom Tov, you can't create a new fire on Yom Tov, but you can increase the intensity of an existing fire. Right? If you have a fire there already, I can put more wood onto the fire to increase the fire. But if there's no fire, I can't create the fire, which is the same idea. I can take the flame from an existing flame to light my Yom Tov candles, but I can't strike a match and light a new flame to light my Yom Tov candles, because I can't create a new flame. And this comes back to really the first week we just started discussing the whole topic of electricity, and we discussed why exactly electricity without a heating element but a regular electrical device is a problem. So we said one of the reasons is because of molid, which means that it's creating something new by having the current now run through these wires and go into this device to turn it on. That was some form of molid. That comes from here. That's part of the Gemara here, that it's molid. To create a new fire, to strike a match, to create a flame, that would be a problem of molid, of creating something new on Yom Tov. So while it wouldn't be a Torah prohibition, because you're allowed to increase the fire on Yom Tov, it is a rabbinic prohibition of creating something new on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to do. Now, lowering the flame, that's a separate issue, because lowering the flame is an issue of kibui, which means of extinguishing. So
you're not extinguishing, you're just diminishing. And with increasing also, you're not creating, it's already there, you're just
right.
You're adding to it.
You don't need the column either. We're not using it.
Right, so certainly it's only midrabbanan. The only time extinguishing a flame is a Torah prohibition is if you extinguish the flame and you want, again, all Torah prohibitions are constructive acts. So how can extinguishing be a constructive act? If you do it for the coals, because I want coals that are warm that are now extinguished. If I extinguish a flame, not for a constructive purpose, but for a destructive purpose of just extinguishing the flame, it's only rabbinic prohibition. So yes, it's certainly only rabbinic. Diminishing, so the reason why diminishing the flame would be to a certain degree extinguishing is because by diminishing you're also extinguishing.
You're partially extinguishing.
So partially extinguishing is also extinguishing a little bit, right. However, on Yom Tov, you are allowed to partially extinguish if it's for the purposes of cooking. How could you extinguish for the purposes of cooking?
You don't want to burn your food.
If you have a pot of food on a flame, and it's going to burn if you don't either remove it or turn down the flame, so the Shulchan Aruch writes, at that point, you're allowed to decrease the flame if you want to save the food. Now, the question is, let's say I have two options in front of me. Right? I have option A, I can make a smaller fire, right? I have one fire in front of me, which is a very high flame, right? Or let's say on our ovens, you have a gas oven, so without the electric ovens, but a gas oven where all I have to do is simply turn the switch, and the pilot light is there, so I can just open the switch, and which would basically be, it's not making a new fire, the fire's there. All I'm doing is increasing it. So I have a very high flame. It's a 7, right, on the dial. So it's a 7 on the dial. And I have two options. I need to turn down this pot of noodles, otherwise all the noodles are going to be ruined. So I can do one of two things. Either I can turn down this flame to a 3, which would keep them hot, or I can open up another one of the 4 burners and turn that one on to a 3, which wouldn't be a problem of starting a new flame, because there's already a pilot light there, so it wouldn't be starting anything new. And I wouldn't be extinguishing at all. All I'd be doing is starting a new flame. So which one is better, halachically? Which one would be better?
Starting a new one.
Why?
Because it's already there, you're transferring it, and you're allowed to do that. Whereas extinguishing...
But then once it's on, you have to leave both on.
You have to leave both on, yeah.
Is the pilot really extinguishing?
Again, if decreasing is extinguishing, then yes. So, yeah, at first thoughts of the Magen Avraham, who's one of the classic commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, writes that better you should start another fire than to decrease this one. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a number of tshuvas about this, and he explains that what the Magen Avraham meant was that back in the days when they didn't have, it wasn't as easy as just turning a dial, and what in order to extinguish a flame or to lower, to decrease the intensity of a flame, you'd have to, you know, throw some sand onto it, and then you need to throw some more sand onto it, and then you need to throw some more sand onto it, and over again until you got it down to where you want the flame to be. Then the Magen Avraham is right, it's better you just start a new one, which will just be a one-shot deal without having to be involved every 10 minutes with checking and putting more extinguishing. Rav Moshe writes that nowadays that it's the same to decrease or start a new flame. He says then it would be the same and you'd be allowed to decrease the existing flame, because it's the same, meaning both decreasing the flame and making a new flame or turning on that burner. The only reason why you could do either of them is because of Ochel Nefesh, because on Yom Tov you're allowed to cook. Both are malachos, both you wouldn't be able to do on Shabbos. But on Yom Tov, if you're doing it for the purposes of the food, and they're equal in how often you have to do them, meaning I don't have to throw sand on it 10 times in order to do it. All I have to do is turn my wrist the same way I would turn my wrist in order to turn on the new flame, then Rav Moshe writes, you can do either one you want. And I assume most people would choose to decrease the existing flame so you don't have two flames burning for the rest of Yom Tov on your stovetop. Yes.
This is the concept of Mitoch Shehutra.
Mitoch Shehutra, yeah.
Right.
So the Gemara writes, Mitoch Shehutra Letzara, Chutra Nami Shel Letzara.
Right, so now, if you can turn on a flame and decrease a flame for the Tzorach of cooking, can mm-hmm. you use flame for light on Yom Tov, turning on a light and shutting off a light, because now that patient
right.
is mutter
right.
for one Tzorach, can you use it for another?
Well, I give you that whole,
article
on
you
gave
me, yeah. So he doesn't mention this Svara. So hold on, just before we get to the answer to that question, so just to understand, the Gemara has a rule that once a malacha is allowed on Yom Tov for the purposes of ochel nefesh, meaning for cooking, like making a fire, then it's hutra nami shelo letzorach. It's also mutter, it's also allowed not for that purpose. Now the question is, what does that mean, shelo letzorach? Does that mean for no reason whatsoever? So the Gemara means that it doesn't mean for no reason. It means for a reason on Yom Tov, just not for cooking. I mean, it needs to be for a reason, for a need. You can't just, you know.
Why can't you?
Right. I need light to go to the bathroom.
Okay. So right. So let's say it's for a need. So I need to see. I need to see. I don't have any lights on, so I need to see. Or shower, hot water, right? Washing your hands, things like that. Yeah. So all of those things. So the answer is, in all of those issues of shower, using hot water in the sink and to wash dishes and all those things, it all depends on whether you will be igniting a new flame or not. Right? When it comes to a light, if we assume that the light, the incandescent bulbs, are considered a fire, so I'm making a new fire. Right. Right.
But I thought that it's possible that you're not making a new fire, like that article said, that you're just transferring it through the
yeah, but
the wires.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, there's no heat in the wires.
Well, you wouldn't touch one.
You wouldn't touch a wire?
If you had an exposed wire, you wouldn't touch it.
Because of the spark. Yeah, but there's no heat in the wire. It's not... Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think that's true.
Which
I mean, he quoted an Aruch HaShulchan, and everybody writes that the Aruch HaShulchan didn't have the correct understanding of how electricity worked. And he's the Aruch HaShulchan is the one who writes that it's just increasing, that you're taking it, it's there, or it exists already, and you're just moving it into the incandescent bulb. But everybody writes that that's not exactly how electricity works. That there's no, it's not like there's a fire in the wires that then goes into the light bulb and makes the light bulb light up. There's a current in the wires that then goes to the light bulb and makes the light bulb light up. But the fire in the light bulb is not in the wires.
Okay. So what if you're...
So...
And I realize we're digressing, but if it were a bulb that wasn't incandescent, so you're not creating a flame with heat, per se, like an LED or a...
Right. So there's no flame.
Or fluorescent.
So that's the whole question of why you can't just turn them on Shabbos. Forget Yontif.
Well, because Shabbos, on Yontif, you'd say you're transferring.
Yeah, but the only reason why Yontif is better than Shabbos is for purposes of making a fire. Meaning,
okay.
Meaning the only area.
You can't do molid on Yontif either.
Right, exactly. Right.
Okay, so you.
So this would also be molid. If you had a fluorescent bulb or an LED bulb, they're all issues, they're all rabbinic prohibitions of creating something new. Even the LED lights, which are, you know, just gases, glowing gas. It also, you're creating something new by lighting it.
So we can actually, on Yom Tov, take candles and decide to light up our house in the evening for Torah Yom Tov, let's say, go over to the flame that's already on the oven
and
light some candles and light up the whole house with candles.
You can't blow them out.
Right, you can't blow that, right. Right. Yeah.
So
just make sure there's tinfoil in there.
What's wrong with them using a dimmer?
Okay, so dimmer also. The dimmer, there are different ways dimmers work. Some dimmers work where it's the same, let's say the same parts of the bulb, just more intense or less intense.
Yeah.
And other dimmers work that, you know, if it's on over here, so two of the three light up. And if you turn it, then all three parts of the bulb light up.
Let's talk about the one that is the same, just getting higher.
Just higher and lower. Yeah. So there are those who say that would be okay on Yom Tov, because all you're doing
is
increasing and decreasing.
Right.
Yeah. As long as it's for a purpose.
Right.
You can't do it just to save electricity when you're leaving
the room.
You're
doing it because
but
it's
a purpose.
So that's a question, whether that's a purpose. Whether that's a discussion. Whether that's good. But they make reference to it. I haven't seen anybody who say that saving money is enough of a reason. Which is why also, why can't, that would, someone that say that, that's why I could turn off a flame. Maybe just, I have a lit, my burner's lit on Yom Tov, let me just turn it off because it would be Latzorah. Just like I can extinguish a flame for the purposes of food, so too let me do it for another tzorech. What's the need? To save some money, because it's expensive to have the gas going all day. But I don't think anybody is... I don't think that's sufficient.
Not a Shabbos, but you'd have to extinguish a flame if your oven was on fire?
If your oven's on fire,
Ma'aseh
Shehayah. Yeah, it's pikuach nefesh. If it's dangerous, then you're allowed to do it even on Shabbat.
Aren't you supposed to, like, put water around it technically in a fire?
Yeah, assuming that everybody can get out without anybody getting hurt. Yeah, but if there's a situation of danger, then you can.
It's very personal.
Yeah. Okay, so that's...
I have a question.
Yes.
Old ovens, the pilot light isn't on, right?
Yes,
like,
and nowadays it's
ovens,
worse. I know. Worse.
Right.
Older ovens are much better for halachically. Halachically,
right.
Older ovens are better.
So
get
now
your hands
you
pretty
on much them. Have to leave all the burners that you want on?
Yeah, it gets much trickier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or can you just open it and with the gas on from a flame, light that one?
What do you mean?
Well, take an existing candle and light the burner from the candle.
Okay,
how would you do that?
You just open
it
up so the gas goes on and you can
try to bypass the
you do it really fast to bypass the initial starter.
I guess.
No, the starter doesn't start till you're part of the way through. In other words, you could just put on the gas.
Or saying don't go
to
the light.
To
the go to just the number.
The gas and then
yeah, I guess. If only that's safe.
You just right. You need
Yeah. Yeah.
Not too long.
Yeah. That would be okay if you're taking it from an existing flame. Then, yeah. Then you'd basically be creating what the old ovens were like. But yeah, the electric ovens are harder for Yontif.
And it's just the gas will be on.
But then you're at a very high flame. So then
well, it doesn't have to. Well, once you miss. Once you
pass the
light. It's the brain. It's normally.
I don't know. I would check with somebody who's done it before trying it. Unless Mark has done
well,
it.
I
haven't done it on
Yantik. I do what you were saying.
And that's
by me, it's just if I turn it a little bit before it gets to the part where it ignites.
So just a little bit.
If you go through the electric starter quickly, it's not going to light.
Okay.
You got to be careful.
That's what I'm saying.
Bypass
it.
Apparently that works. Then yes, as long as it's coming from an existing, you have your earthside candle, you know, your 48-hour candle, then yeah, you just take the flame from there. Yes. That would be enough.
And what about warming drawers?
Yeah.
Those mechanisms, you know.
What do you mean?
They have a drawer that's
the warming drawer.
Can you use those? You can't use them on Shabbos then.
But that's only warming.
Right. If you can't cook in them, meaning it's impossible to.
Right.
Then as long as you, I think there are opinions that say that as long as you cover the controls, meaning the dial that allows you to change the settings, cover it well, then you would be able to use it even on Shabbos, because all you're doing is warming. And it's not a problem of insulating, because it's not touching the object on all sides. No, it's not surrounding it. It's not insulating.
Well, why is crackless? Crackless is on all sides.
Yeah, crackless.
My only question is, before you mentioned that, you know, like now, with today's times, decreasing and increasing, is not what it used to be once, right? Because once upon a time you had to throw a lot of sand and throw a lot of the world. Okay. So in that, they are, quote unquote, progressing with the times.
Right.
Right? And there is like a, you know, whatever, and they're saying, oh, okay, so they're not doing that though in other respects and other things. They're picking and choosing sometimes which... You know,
well,
and I don't understand the sometimes.
What do you mean?
Like,
meaning, it depends. Unfortunately, all of the appliance companies are not consulting the rabbis before making any of these changes.
No.
So
I
the problem is that. Because it all depends on what exactly is happening and what's changing.
Right.
Meaning, for example, Rabbi Heinemann is of the opinion that he's created an oven that you can even use the computer part of it on Yom Tov. Right? This type of oven, you'd even be able to change the from 250 to 450 by pressing 450, as long as the display is off and there is a delay as to changing of the degree,
right.
That would be sufficient on Yom Tov.
Right.
So that's, you know. So it all depends, you know, with all of these changes in technology, so the rabbis need to view each situation separately and say, well, what's changed? Sometimes the changes make it easier and better for us. They're certainly more comfortable and convenient. The question is, halachically, is that easier to maneuver, and sometimes it's harder. The more, you know, motion sensor oriented and exact that thermostats will get in refrigerators and in ovens, it will make it more halachically compromising. Because it will be an exact change that the moment I open my refrigerator, we see it with fans and with lights in the refrigerator, that the moment that I open it, the fan will go off and the light will go on. So that type of change is much nicer, it's more convenient, and it's wonderful during the week, but not on Shabbos and not on Yom Tov. So it all depends on, you know, the rabbis take each case and look at it and try to, you know, they dissect it through the lens of halacha to decide whether it's better, whether they can allow it or not. You know, the rabbi's job isn't to make our lives more difficult.
No. Go back to the iceboxes and pop belly stoves.
The rabbi should cook for a month and then.
All
our roles will be different.
Okay. So just now
it's
getting.
A wing one, I'm
now that it, I would say now it's getting late, but now that it is late already, So we'll just run through the last piece of introduction, and then we'll jump into applying it to this actual type of oven. So the last part of introduction is grumma, which we've discussed in the past a few times, that indirect causation. And there are a few different definitions for what does it mean that something is indirect. And the most simple definition is that there's a time delay between when I do something, my action, and the result that occurs. When there's a time delay between my action and the result, that's considered indirect, that's considered grumma, and therefore it's more lenient. How lenient is it? Is it completely mutter? So on Shabbos, certainly not. Right? Grumma on Shabbos is certainly something which is asur midrabbanan, meaning if somehow there would be an indirect cause, let's say I walk into a room and the motion sensors pick up that I'm in the room, and there's a time delay between when I walk into the room and when the lights go on, so that's grumma, that's indirect causation. If I want the lights to go on, and I'm happy that they went on because now I can see in the room, so then it is a rabbinic violation. Right? I shouldn't have walked, and I knew that this would happen. I knew that when I walk into this room, the lights will go on 10 seconds later. So that would be something which is forbidden midrabbanan, according to the rabbis, not according to the Torah, because it's indirect.
Didn't we talk about that light switch that was
We're getting there. That's what we're getting. That's the next one. That's in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from tonight. Yeah. No, I mentioned it in passing. But that's where I'm trying to get to. Yeah, we're going to need a topic, yeah. I have an idea, but I'll tell you after. So that's grumma. So there are other explanations to grumma. It means that there's another Rav Soloveitchik's explanation of grumma is that in order for this result to occur, there has to be another koch acher, meaning another force included in this action. For example, you need the wind to get involved in order to do something. Or, you need some type of external force in order to happen. And it has to be that the external force at the time that you, let's say, I take a candle and I put it by the window. The window's open. Can I open the window? So, as long as the halacha is, I can't open the window because the wind might blow and extinguish the flame, right? But I'm not extinguishing the flame because when I open the window, the flame doesn't go out. Because at that moment in time, the wind wasn't blowing. If I know it's a very windy night outside, and the minute I open the window, and right in front of the flame will extinguish immediately, that's as if I extinguished that flame. But let's say, Rav Soloveitchik would say, if the wind is not there at the time that I open the window, and then it does come and blow out and blows out the fire, then it would be grumma, because I'm causing. One opinion would say, look, you see there's a time delay. And Rabbi Soloveitchik would say, no, it's not about the time delay. It's that this other external force, the wind, was not present at the time that I did my action, and therefore it's not my action. But it is grumma because I did cause it to occur, that I did cause the flame to go out. That's on Shabbos. But if it's a makom hefsed, if there's a great loss, or if it's a situation of great need, then there is room to be lenient even on Shabbos. What about Yontif, right? Is this true also on Yontif? And since we're talking about the Shabbos Mon Oven, which is really all about Yontif, so the question is grumma also Aser Midrabanan, a rabbinic prohibition on Yontif? So the Rav Moshe Isserles, in his comments in the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Yontif, writes this case about putting a candle in a place that you know the wind will blow. The wind is not blowing currently, but the wind will blow it out. The Rama writes that you are allowed to put it there on Yontif, meaning if it's not a windy night. But I suspect that if I open the window, a wind will come at some point and blow out my candles. The Rama writes that you would be allowed to open your window on Yontif. I want it out. I'm happy for it to go out, but I'm not putting it out because when I open the window, nothing happens. But there will be a time tonight that there will be a strong wind that will extinguish the flame. That's mutter on Yom Tov. And the question is, why should Yom Tov be any different than Shabbos? On Shabbos, we said, you can't do that. And on Yom Tov, we said, you can't do that. So the Magen Avraham also, again, the Magen Avraham in his comments on the Shulchan Aruch says, it's wrong. It can't be. This is an inconsistency. He can't say that on Shabbos, you can't do it. On Yom Tov, you can do it. They're both aser. No difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. You can't do it on Shabbos. You can't do it on Yom Tov. But many disagree with this Magen Avraham. There are some who, many follow the Magen Avraham's opinion, and many disagree with the Magen Avraham's opinion, because the Ramah seems, says that it's mutter. Why? What would be the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov? So the Aruch HaShulchan, in his comments, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that the difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is the only time we make rabbinic the rabbis made rabbinic decrees is to protect us from something that if you violate it, you would be punished by kares, which means being cut off from Hashem, which a number of meanings exactly what that means. An early death, or an untimely death, or death of children, whatever exactly that means, but something that if you violate it, you would be punished by kares. So Shabbos, if you violate it on purpose, but without anybody telling you and warning you, so there are three different levels of punishment on Shabbos. If you do something by accident, you have to bring a korban chatos. If you do something on purpose, you are punished by kares. If you do something on purpose and there are two people there who warn you that you shouldn't do this because it's forbidden on Shabbos and you do it anyway, then they can take you to the Beis Din and they can kill you. Right? Those are the three different levels of Shabbos. So let's say a person does violate a prohibition on Shabbos knowing that it's forbidden on Shabbos and it's a Torah prohibition, he is chayev kares. He is punished by kares. As opposed to Yontif, if you violate Yontif, all you get is malchus, flogging. Right? So all you get is lashes, which is certainly nothing to write home about, but it's a lav. It's only a lav. It's not a kares. It's not as, what that means is the way you know how serious a violation is if you look at the punishment. So violating Shabbos is much more serious than violating Yom Tov, which is why the Gemara in Megillah points out that violating Shabbos is even worse than violating Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur you're chayav kares, but on Shabbos you could even be killed in Beis Din, which is the worst punishment. So that's how the Gemara says, that's how you know that Shabbos is more stringent than Yom Kippur, right? Even though when we have Shabbos and Yom Kippur coincide, Yom Kippur seems to overpower Shabbos because we have to fast. It's not the case. It's not more stringent. But anyway, that's an aside. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, the reason why we can have a rabbinic decree that exists on Shabbos that does not exist on Yom Tov is because there's a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Shabbos is more stringent than Yom Tov, and therefore we can have grumma, which is the indirect causing of a result, that can be forbidden on Shabbos, but it could be allowed on Yom Tov. And that's why he says, that's how he explains the Ramah. The Ramah says, I can open up my window even though the candles are there on Yom Tov, but I can't on Shabbos. Because Grama, the Ramah explains the Aruch HaShulchan, the Ramah thinks that Grama is mutter on Yom Tov, it's only usher on Shabbos. Meaning that if I do something and I want the result to occur, but there will be a time delay, let's say, between when I do my action and when the result occurs, it would still be mutter on Yom Tov, according to the Ramah. Fine. That's the introduction. Now, taking that and applying it quickly to our oven, or these two types of ovens, so obviously the one with the time delay is better. Right? The one where if you were to change the temperature, that the time delay would be better is because of the delay creates a situation of grumma. Now, the question is, why do you need grumma? Someone asks, why do you need grumma? Right? Who cares? I can increase a flame on Yom Tov. So who needs grumma? Right? The question is, can I increase the flame on this electric oven? If it's at 250, can I press 450 and allow it to go to 450? So if I'm allowed to increase the flame on Yom Tov, so that's true. If you see that the coils are already on, that the flame is already on, and all I would be doing is by increasing the temperature is to increase the intensity of the coils or increase the intensity of the flame, then you're right. You don't need the time delay. But let's say I look into my oven and it's off for the moment, right? The thermostat kicked in and it's off. It's maintaining 250 degrees in the oven and the flame's not on at the moment. Can I change it to 450? Now, it will definitely turn the flame on if I change it to 450, because the thermostat is 250 and I need it at 450, all of a sudden it will turn the flame on and it will warm, it will heat up to 450. So the question is, can I do that on Yom Tov? So the answer is that Rav Heinemann writes that it depends if there's a delay or not. If you have the Shabbos compliance mode, where there's no delay between when I change the 250 to 450 and when it actually happens, then you can't do it, because that would be basically turning on a new flame. But if you have the Shabbos mode oven, the Sabbath mode oven, which means that there's a delay, that is that random delay of 15 to 25 seconds from the time that I change the temperature on the oven to when the computer will actually realize or recognize and react to that change, then that would be grumma, Rav Heinemann writes, and therefore that would be allowed as long as you have that delay. Right? That's what Rav Heinemann would say.
So does that mean that based on his description of what this says, Sabbath mode versus Sabbath compliance, does that mean any oven that says Sabbath mode on it, are you assuming that there is a delay, or do you have to find out based on their...
I guess you should find out, but it's very easy to find out because the Star K has it all on their website.
Okay.
Yeah, if you go to the Star K's website, they explain how all these work, and they even have appliance lists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if anybody's in the market for new appliances, yeah, they have... appliance lists on their website. Yeah, go to the Star K website. Now, not everybody agrees with this, obviously, because first of all, not everybody agrees that time delay is grumma, right? It may not be a time delay. It might be whether there's an external force that's already acting on it as opposed to an external force that will come later. So if that's the distinction, then this would not necessarily be grumma. Now, one of the assumptions, what else? He also assumes that this 15-25 seconds is enough of a time delay, right? But it's not clear exactly how much of a time delay do you need in order to call it a time delay. Also, something that we've mentioned a few times already, if something is made to work with a time delay, is that still called indirect causation?
Right, because your computer is still active, even though the result of what you're trying to do hasn't happened yet. The computer is causing the delay, so the computer is working. So you're activating
right. The
computer.
That's true, but let's say I wasn't even, and there was a time delay. But the way that this was created to work, the way that it was made, was to work with a time delay. So does that mean grumma? Grumma means indirect causation, means it's not the normal way to do something. Right? If it's the normal way to do it, so can you still call it indirect? So that's a question. If it's the normal way, right? We spoke about that, was it last week when we spoke about the motion sensor lights? If that's the normal way of turning on those lights, can you say that that's grumma? That that's indirect, because that's not how you normally turn on a light. But that's how you normally turn on that light, by walking by it at night and tripping the motion sensor. So that's also something to be discussed about this topic, about this oven. This is the normal way it works with a 15-second delay.
But only if it's on
on the Shabbos. Right.
That's not the normal way
so
you work.
That's what Rav Heinemann answered. Yeah. He has a tshuva, if anybody's interested. He has a 7-page tshuva. Yes. Rav Heinemann says...
Hank, right here.
Rav Heinemann says, what do you mean? Right after Yom Tov, you turn this mode off.
Right.
So it's not the normal way of that it works. You don't want it to work in that way. How do I know? You turn it off right after Yom Tov.
Right.
So that's his answer. That's his response to that that question. Now, another assumption that Rav Heinemann makes, there's also a question about you're increasing the current, but let's assume that that's not a problem, which we've also discussed when we spoke about Shabbos elevators. Let's assume that it's also not a problem. Now, the other big jump, an assumption that Rav Heinemann makes, is that when I touch the screen, the touchpad, and I'm making some type of change in this computer, that that's allowed, right? That I'm allowed to, it's all electric, so it's on 250. I set it on 250 from the beginning of Yom Tov, and now I want it to be on 450. I can press 450 on the computer because I won't see it on the screen, right? Which is an assumption that he's making. Why would I be allowed to do that? Right? Can I type on my computer if the monitor is off on Shabbos? That's what you're going to say?
Yeah.
So can
I was going to say, can I text somebody if we get something... Once it's allowed for food, then it's allowed for other things too.
Right. It would be allowed for other purposes. Right.
Find a way
you're right.
Shut
it's
your
not.
Screen
for
off
let's say I turn off the monitor.
I'll
send an email on Yontif on my computer screen because I won't see anything. Right.
That's not the normal way to do it.
No, that is the normal way. Just you don't see it.
Right.
So the question. So Rav Heineman assumes. And he quotes a number of proofs for this, that if you don't see something, basically what you don't see...
Didn't happen.
It's okay if
it... it doesn't hurt you, right?
Tree falls from the bars...
Wait,
so
you
still
can cover your eyes.
Right. It doesn't mean you can just cover your eyes, because that's still there. For example, he quotes two examples. I'll give you two of the examples he gives. One example is where Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about bugs in salad, on lettuce. Rav Moshe Feinstein says that if you have bugs on your lettuce that you can't see with the naked eye, it's okay.
It's
fine.
That's a flatbush.
And yet everybody's making...
So that's what Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote. If you need a magnifying glass to see the bug, you don't have to worry about it.
Yes, why are we so kept on bugs?
That's what Rav Moshe Feinstein writes.
Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein was a great rabbi.
And halakha is not like Rabbi Moshe
Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that.
And that's the first person to hear that from.
But I see it in there. Or that I know it's in there, Ramosha said. You can't see it with the naked eye. It's not a problem. A second example. If you have a Sefer Torah, and you know that the letters of the Sefer Torah can't be touching, right? You can't have two letters of the Sefer Torah touching. There needs to be at least a drop of white parchment around every letter. So let's say it looks to me like they're touching. I see a Sefer Torah, and it looks like they're touching. And I get the magnifying glass, and I look, and they're not touching.
So the same principle.
Is it kosher? Or is it puzzle? It looks like it's touching, which would mean it's puzzle. But I look with a magnifying glass, it's not touching. So what do I follow?
You're not supposed to look with a magnifying glass.
So the answer is, it would be puzzle. It would be puzzle because with the naked eye, it looks like it's touching. Let's say it was the opposite. I look and it looks like it's not touching. I take a magnifying glass, I look, and it is touching. So what's the halacha? It would be kosher. Right. It would be kosher. Right. Because if you can't see it with the naked eye, you don't have to worry about it. Right? It's not an issue. Both to be stringent as well as to be lenient.
So going back to here,
Rav Heineman quotes those and says, therefore, I'm allowed to write to change the setting of the oven, change the numbers on the oven, because I don't see it.
You could have made it really small that you had to look at it with a magnifying glass, and that's why you can do it on Shabbos with a magnifying glass.
Yeah,
with a magnifying glass.
Yeah, you're saying then you still would have been able to know what you're doing.
Right.
I was thinking about getting a Shabbos guide, but I'm going to get a Summa instead.
No, so that wouldn't work. Well, that wouldn't work. No, it's not about whether he could see it. Now, Rav Heineman. But Rav Heineman does say that the case of the computer wouldn't be the same. What's the difference between the oven and the computer? He says because in the computer, when you type, there is some savable data on the computer. When I type something onto the screen, it can be saved and then saved in the computer chip. As opposed to if I type it into the oven, it's not being saved anywhere. There's nothing to save. There's no permanent mark anywhere of typing onto that screen. So that's what he writes. Now, not everybody agrees to that. That point, certainly, not everybody agrees. Because some say... Now, this is a copy of an English translation of the... that a number of Gedolim came out from across the world, from Eretz Yisrael to California, who came out against this type of oven. And they basically had three points that they disagreed to. One of them is the grumma issue. They said it's not grumma because it's a normal way for this oven to function. That was one. The second one, or really the first one, was the pressing the keys. Because pressing the keys, although you don't see any change on anything, there is a change. And the way they write it is that there is a completion of a circuit. Right? Something's happening when you press on those numbers. Right? Something is happening that wasn't happening before. And therefore, it's a completion of a circuit, or some type of electricity is now going through. Something is happening. in there that wasn't happening before. And therefore, they say even though you can't see the numbers or you don't see the numbers, it would still be an issue on Shabbos, whether because of fixing or makabit patish or it's moly. It's doing something. It's doing something on Yontif. And then the third one, which is really one of their concerns, was that it would lead to an assault on the sanctity of Shabbos and Yontif. If you have an oven that you can basically turn on and off on Yontif. Now, Rav Heinemann's response to that was, they wrote this in 2008. It's been happening for 10 years already, and there is no assault on the sanctity of Shabbos and Yontif. So, in regard to the oven, meaning caused by these ovens. So, he did have a whole response to this. I think in deference to the great rabbis who did sign this, he said that Rav Heinemann wrote that he thinks it is mutter, but you know the rabbis said that it's not. Rav Yashuv, Rav Nissen Karelitz, Rav Vosner, Rav Yechezkel Roth, all of them are big rabbis. Rav Shlomo Miller, who was a Rosh Kol in Toronto, Rabbi Bess from Los Angeles, and then a few other Rabbi Tauber, Rabbi Wachtfogel, and Rabbi Horowitz from Tells. So just again, all across, you know, from Eretz Yisrael to all across America, North America, and Toronto. So they felt that it was wrong. You know, my opinion doesn't matter here. But you know, there is what to talk about. He does have a lot of reasons to rely on it. There are a number of reasons to deny it. But certainly, the CRC, which is the
Chicago,
they also came out with something about this, which I also have printed out somewhere here amongst all my papers. So they seem to take they were closer to being against, closer to being against. Now, yeah, that
it really makes
they write that if the although they write that if the fire is visibly burning in the oven, the thermostat may be adjusted higher, and if the fire is not burning, then the thermostat may be adjusted lower. But they didn't go as far as saying that if it's not, that you'd be able to adjust it. But they do talk about adjusting the thermostat, which I assume, which is referring to those type of ovens. I assume they're talking about the computer part. They do, I think, from the best of my understanding, they are allowing that, but they're not allowing the grumma jump, that even if the flame is off, and you now increase the number to make it a higher temperature, and that would cause the flame to go on, even if there is that random delay, they said that that is not widely accepted, in their words, of the CRC. But anyway, that's basically the topic of the Shabbos oven.
I know a lot of people then will say that you can't change the temperature at all. You have to set it before you have to set one temperature.
Right.
And then
that would be the simplest approach. That would be using... Yep.
And then cook faster or slower.
Yeah. I think 350 or something.
Right. I mean, that's the easiest way to deal with the Shabbos oven, because then you're basically turning it into an oven, like an old gas oven, that basically it will stay on forever until you turn it off. It has no beeps and beeping and noises and reactions to opening or closing. And you're just leaving it on, and that would be, so that's the simplest, that everybody would agree to. Right. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.